हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So we're on page 20. 20, the third paragraph, is that the one? Oh, because you have a different... You have the... Page 20?
Yeah.
And the author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, third one.
Yeah.
Okay. The author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits that he is just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this work. That should be the attitude of all preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think of ourselves as great preachers, but should always consider that we are simply instrumental to the previous acharyas. And simply by following in their footsteps, we may be able to do something for the benefit of suffering humanity. So the means the highest welfare or welfare is established as that which is beneficial for everybody. So that means the whole world. So then we see as here, Srila Rupa Goswami here is thinking in terms of the whole world. As we saw that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his conversations with Srila Prabhupada, he was discussing the whole world. Does that make sense? Because that's Lord Chaitanya's mood. Lord Chaitanya's mood is the whole world. Do you drink a lot of water? No. See, it's when you don't eat and you fast, then what happens is all of the poisons in the body that may be any toxins, they go into the digestive system, into your stomach. Right? Then, if there's not a lot of water in that to wash them out or something, then they will move more slowly through the system, and then when they go farther through the stomach and all that, then all those toxins will be pulled out into the blood. Right? And then when they go into the blood, they'll either come out as a rash or out as pimples or boils. Understand? So there's more involved than not eating. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So now he feels himself unable to do this. But that is the natural. We don't think of ourselves as great preachers. We are simply instruments for the preaching. Right? In other words, we do whatever we can. So it's not that we're the ones that are doing everything. We do what we can. The acharyas, they're doing everything, and we just assist. Because when we get to the spiritual world, that's what's going on. We're not actually serving Krishna, right? The previous acharyas and that, they're serving Krishna. They don't think they're actually serving Krishna. They feel they're instruments to serving, you know, under the direction of the gopis. And they feel they're not serving, but Radharani's serving, and she feels she's not a servant. Right? So that means there's no one actually in the line that feels that they are the one who's doing the work. Right? Does that make sense? So that's always the principle, is that we feel we are doing our best to assist. Right? So that's the importance of cooperation and other aspects like that. Yes? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is divided into four parts, just as the ocean is sometimes divided into four parts. And there are different sections within each of these four divisions. Originally, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, The ocean is divided like the watery ocean into east, south, west, and north, while the subsections within these different divisions are called waves. As in an ocean, there are always different waves, either on the eastern side, the southern, the western, or the northern side. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu similarly has different waves. In the first part, there are four waves, the first being a general description of devotional service. The second concerns the regulative principles for executing devotional service. And the third wave, devotional service in ecstasy. In the fourth is the ultimate goal of life, love of Godhead. These will be explicitly described along with their symptoms in the back. Here we have 409. I'm not sure what you have there, but it's just after. Oh, wow, heaven. Actually, it's after the author. Then you have actually from the original where the waves are, and then Srila Prabhupada points out where the differences are. So you can see. So what has happened here is that you have eastern side, Bhagavad Bhakti Beda, varieties of devotional service. Then he has, like Prabhupada says, first wave, Samanya Bhakti is devotional service in general. Second wave, sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice. Third wave, bhava bhakti, ecstatic devotional service. And fourth wave, prema bhakti, devotional service and love of God. So basically you have five chapters. He's taking this wave and then to make it easier to understand, broken it up into five chapters. And in each of those chapters, then he has main headings to describe, you know, what's going on. So you have five chapters in the first wave, then the second wave, then that means that's 5 off of 19, so at least 14. Then the fourth wave, prema bhakti, has 1, so that's 13. The third wave has 2, that's 12, 11. Right? So then you have 11 chapters in the second wave. Right? So Prabhupada has taken these four. So like that, throughout the whole book, then he is broken it up just to make it easier for us. So that's why then it's a summary study, because then it makes it easier to understand. They're categorized very nicely. The authorized scriptures of bhakti or devotional service, following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, can be summarized in the following statement by Srila Rupa Goswami. Quote, first-class devotional service is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. Right? So he always makes this point of being Krishna conscious and being favorable. Right, so being conscious is the first step. So not generally the devotees, they're conscious and it's favorable, but still one has to be aware. Because one can be conscious, but what one's doing is not favorable. Does that make sense? So that means it's favorable because Krishna likes it that way. It's not favorable because we've decided what Krishna likes. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. What is it that makes Krishna pleased with it? One is the devotional attitude. A devotional attitude where we're not trying to gain anything for ourselves. We're simply trying to please. So that's the main thing. Then he has natural, so that's the most important. If that's there, that's then it defined properly as devotional service. It's the devotional attitude that is favorable for Krishna's pleasure. Now then the forms or the mediums that it takes in that service, then there are forms that Krishna more prefers. And then there's forms that Krishna less prefers. But the point is whatever it is, it should be done with devotion. In other words, if you have a form that Krishna more prefers, but the attitude is less, right, and a form that's not so preferred, but the attitude is more, naturally, it's whichever has the more attitude, right? And generally, in most conversations, this is where most people like to stop the discussion. But there is also the option of using a form that Krishna prefers and doing it with the devotional attitude and that it's favorable. So then you have three aspects that Krishna likes, as opposed to two. Right? But those two are the most important. The devotional atmosphere, a conscious of Krishna with the right mood. So one has to be conscious to be Krishna conscious, right? Because if you're not conscious, how do you know that you are Krishna conscious, right? Just like the impersonalist. They figure they merge into the Supreme. But if you merge, then you don't have your individuality. So how do you know you're happy? Right? If you don't exist, how do you know if you're happy? Right? Doesn't make sense. So if you're not conscious, how do you know that your devotional service is favorable? Right? So you have to be conscious. Then you can, that consciousness, then you can put Krishna there. It's a yoga system, right? Yoga system, until you're focused on one spot, how do you put Vishnu in there for meditation? Right? So if you're not conscious, how can you be conscious of Krishna? What do you think? What do you think about first being conscious, then being Krishna conscious?
It's a good idea.
So you're doing some deep concentration and meditation upon that point. So deep you are oblivious to the world, so focused in your absorption. Yes? No, you weren't so absorbed. You were distracted. Oh, so we should tell him not to distract you next time. I see. So we should wait until you just naturally fall over and hit your head on the floor, then you'll wake up. So exactly like that. Okay. The purport is that one may also be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably, but that cannot be counted as pure devotional service. Devotional service should be free from the desire for any material benefit or for sense gratification, as these desires are cultivated through fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. Generally, people... Yes?
How can you be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably? Because to be Krishna conscious, you need to be conscious to be Krishna conscious. And if you're unfavorably, you can say you can't be... If you're forced in some devotional service, this isn't necessarily Krishna conscious, this is devotional service or some service.
If you're forced...
No, so for example, if you're unfavorably, you don't want to be there.
Because your definition is not properly placed. You know what I'm saying? You have a good definition. But the problem is then it's the wrong example. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what we're saying in the Nyaya, where we'll get back to it this evening, yeah, where your argument is good, but you've applied it on the wrong thing.
Okay.
Right? While the other thing is it's applied on the right thing, but it's the wrong argument. Or it's a complete misunderstanding of the whole thing. But here is, you have a good point, but you applied it on the wrong part. Favorable devotional service doesn't mean favorable to us, it means favorable to Krishna.
Okay,
now that makes sense? So the example would be Kamsa.
Yes.
He was 24/7 thinking of Krishna, but it wasn't favorable to Krishna. You understand? So that's what I mean. It doesn't mean favorable. So if you are Krishna conscious, that is favorable to you.
Yeah.
Like that.
Cool.
Okay?
Everything.
Yeah, they're all Krishna conscious, but it's not favorable. That's why the distinction is made. Generally, we don't think, we take it as synonymous, because in one sense it is. Pure devotional service means it is. But in the process of becoming God conscious, it's not necessarily. So it's just like we're praying to Krishna for something that's material. Then that we've gone to him, that's good. Like that. But it won't be called pure devotional service. Right? It's devotional service, but it's not pure devotional service, because it's not necessarily favorable to Krishna. Right? If it's something you're trying to do for Krishna, and therefore have the intelligence or this or that to do it, then it may be the focus is on the material, but the ultimate result of that is for Krishna. Right, then it would be considered that's good, it's progressive. But pure devotional service means when that's not there. Like Kardama, he sees that he wants to go back to Godhead, serve the Lord, but he has material attachments. So he approaches the Lord so that he may be successful in gaining family life and going through it. Right, so he's approached. So it's good. That's your first story, and you know that Sukadev Goswami describes. Right, so. Then that principle, that's fine, but we will consider when you don't have something you're trying to gain yourself. In other words, it's your duty to go through these things or whatever. That's another thing. You know, but he had the desire, but he approaches the Lord. So that's there. So we're pointing it out so we see the difference. Otherwise we think, well, I'm thinking Krishna, I'm praying to Krishna, I'm doing all these things, so that's good enough. But it is being pointed out that one is trying to take it farther. It's tinged by karma and jnana, so it's jnana misra, karma misra.
And then when one recognizes that there's a need, but they also recognize the fact that they don't need to do this, but then still there's a need, this is still, until it gets to the point where the need is gone completely, and
The need means is that you could say the need for it, it doesn't mean the form disappears.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So
like Ambarish Maharaj is a pure devotee. It's where the attachment lies. In other words, that's the point. Where is the goal?
Okay.
If you're seeing yourself as a devotee of Krishna, but you have these material desires, so you're approaching Krishna because you're his devotee, right? You're not going to someone else. So then that's nice. You know, it's some kind of reciprocation or some kind of relationship. But the attachment is to something else. Right, so because the identity is different, therefore the attachments are different. So as the identity becomes more fixed, the attachments will also become more regularized.
Yeah, because if the attachment was on Krishna, then you would just directly serve.
Yeah. Yes, but here you have to understand is that because pure devotional service then is starting from the Madhyam platform of Nishta. There'll be an overlap, but the point is the determination is pure. One may not be. I've heard it said that in the Bengali or Sanskrit, it's written, Rupa Goswami makes the point of 60%. Once it comes to 60%, then it's considered that that's the prominent. You understand? So it's still 40% impure, but it's 60%. Is pure. That means the determination is greater than 50-50. Because 50, it could go this way or that way. This means it's on the determined side. This is a great mistake that many make, is that they think until it's 100% pure, it's not pure. Right? So that's the point is that no, because it's pure in the intent. Then with time, the form will also take on that. Once you get to that point, then it moves very quickly. Before that point, it's much slower, like that. And as it comes to the point of actually, then it being simply philosophical determination, you actually have a taste for the name, then it speeds up incredibly quick.
Yeah, because when it switches, it's like, so you're taking shelter of Krishna, so then Krishna takes control of the external situation, rather than you fighting whatever.
Yeah, well, or fighting or just trying to establish the environment that you want. In other words, it's Krishna's environment, so you're serving that environment rather than you're trying to create your own environment. You know what I'm saying? Still, you have to do it through the same method, but the intent is slightly different. So to be able to see what's one's intent and all that, that's the point. Not by the form. You know what I'm saying? You know, Ambarish Maharaj is a grihastha, he's a king, he's the emperor of the world. But his intent is pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada is a family person, but his intent is pure devotion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, therefore, the forms that they're using, the medium that they're using, is that of a person who's involved in the material activities, both in Varna and Ashram. Right? But the purpose is to please Krishna. Because the point is very easily one can say all these things, but one has to be able to determine and understand where the fault lies. You know what I'm saying? Because if you can do that, then you can also tell what's useful and what's not. Like what we said before, according to the Nyaya, in other words, the concept that you had there in the presentation was correct, but it was misapplied. You understand? So, but in a general argument, because there's the misapplication, then the value of what you're applying is thrown out also. So that's the baby with the bathwater. The point is the bathwater is dirty. You throw that out, you keep the baby. Right? Does that make sense? So the problem in much of the modern context are that they can't make this distinction. And so they connect it all together, so they throw out everything. You know what I'm saying? They can't use the intelligence to define the difference. That's why it's important. So here Srila Rupa Goswami is making the point is that means serving the Lord, engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably, that both parts are there, then you can actually tell the quality of it. Otherwise, it's hard to tell the quality. Is that okay? Yeah. You understand all that? Yes. Do we understand the application of that point of Nyaya? Yes? No? Not very well. Means that you have something that you are, how do you say? You have a point to be made, but the point that you make actually doesn't fit the example that you give. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's a good argument, it's a good point, but it's applied in the wrong place. You know, like, is deep frying vegetables a bona fide cooking process? Okay, what about if we deep fry tomatoes? Yeah, it's not you because it's the wrong application. You know what I'm saying? But that doesn't mean that the point is bogus. It just means that the application wasn't correct. Right? Okay, yes. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that the point about that it should be favorable to something means something that they like, situations they like to be in, things that they like, how they like to interact, that's all a correct understanding of favorable. But it was applied to ourselves rather than to Krishna. Right? Because this is what is being talked about. Here is Krishna. So therefore, then the argument is able to understand situations once in and applications of service within that. Right? So with that kind of understanding, then when you apply it actually to Krishna, that means the situations in which devotional service is done and the kind of devotional service is done, or the environment or the mood, right? Then you understand that's all what's considered unfavorable. Otherwise, most devotees just take it as constantly engaged in, you know, in Krishna. It means you're constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness is the same as serving the Lord favorably. They don't make a distinction. So therefore, so many other things could come up in their devotional, you know, activities that actually aren't favorable to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's nice, okay, that you recognize, but on what level? So favorable to Krishna means Krishna as a person. You know what I'm saying? You're dealing with Brahman and Paramatma, that's nice. It's in its own way, okay, it's favorable in that way. But at the same time, it's very much in consideration of ourselves. Right? Because the energies that are working this world, that's your Brahman feature, but that's managed by Paramatma, right? So in that way, you could say that the creation as you see it, that's Garbhodakshay Vishnu, right? Because he is the universal form, he is Virat, right? At the same time, you know, and then Paramatma is then in every atom, between every atom, and he maintains it. He's the maintainer. Right, because you have Brahma and Shiva, creator and destroyer, he's the maintainer. So sitting in everyone's heart, he maintains all that. The same time as you could look at it is that actually he's the one that has technically entered into everything. You know, it's Garbhodakshay as his potency, but as Kiradakshay actually enters it. So therefore you could take Paramatma as universal form. Right? And in other words, there's going to be on both platforms of the attract means having entered it, you make the dead matter attractive. So So that's Prajumna. But at the same, because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is Prajumna. But at the same time is that there's not going to be action without Aniruddha, right? Until this goal, Prayojana. So in one sense, they're very closely connected, because by desire, if that's contemplated, it becomes attachment. And whatever is gained from attachment goes back to the position of future desire. Right? So there are different aspects of the same thing. Right? Aniruddha is an expansion of Prajumna. Prajumna is an expansion of Sankarshan. Right? So the environment, the rules, the regulations, the elements, how the whole thing works, its purposes, its goals, its understanding, philosophy, that's all Sankarshan. From that comes the desire to perform the activity, which is Prajumna. Expanding from him is then the need to do it, which is Aniruddha. Right? Then you'll have Vasudeva, but the interesting thing is Vasudeva is the source of Sankarshan. So in other words, the desire to do activity, so the environment and everything's created, and then Krishna can come and perform the activity. Is that okay? Like that. So you have to be able to distinguish these. So therefore, there's... You had something?
Sorry. So I know we're trying not to ask things from the beginning of the course, but we did go back through the text and we couldn't find that direct explanation of Sankarshana Aniruddha relating to Samanda Vidaya Prayojana. So he's asking...
Direct. What do you mean by direct?
Direct.
You said... What did you say?
Direct.
Huh?
He said direct.
You said you couldn't find a direct definition. I just wanted to know what you meant by direct. Because otherwise...
I
then.
Think it's indirect. I mean, we couldn't find...
Okay, well, then... Oh, you couldn't find the explanation.
Yeah. Because you mentioned it many times, but I can't fully, because I haven't had you explain it from the start.
Day and Prayojana. Okay. Sambandha, you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, right? So you have three, it has three parts. But within Sambandha, then there's two aspects. One is the actual relationship itself and everything connected to the relationship. The other is the inspiration to act within that relationship, right? But you haven't acted, you're inspired to act. So when you act, that's Abhideya, that's Vasudeva, right? And the goal that you're trying to achieve in that action or in that in the interaction of the relationship, that's Aniruddha. So he's the goal. Does that make sense? So in understanding Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, then you always see is that the Acharyas break Sambandha into the two parts. So Vedanta Sutra is like that. Prabhupada's analysis on Gita is like that. The Chatushloki is like that. Right, the first of the Chatushloki is that Krishna says he is everything. Whatever you see is him. He was there before the creation, he's there during, he's there after. So whatever you're looking at, if you're perceiving it, it's him. Right? Because that gets rid of your concept of deism. Otherwise, the first thing we're going to do is accept the supremacy of God, but distance him from the material world, because we're the controllers of it. Right? It's all right, he's God, but still I'm the controller of what is mine. Right? So the whole point, does that make sense? Because otherwise, if he's everything, I have to change my identity. Because even the things that I consider my identity are still him. Right? So, if I'm this body, but he's the concept of form of the body, the workings of the body, so I can't claim it to be my own. Well, if I deify the Lord, I can put him back, or deify Prabhupada, I can put them back. That leaves me as the undisputed, at least in my view, the undisputed, Lord of my life. Yeah, it puts you in the position of Sankarshan because, and all these things, because then it's not Krishna. So that's his first point he makes. Second point he makes is whatever within whatever is in this world that you see, whatever you value, that's him. Because it's by that value, that's the area you're going to work in. Right? There's so many things going on in the world, but you only work in some of them. Those ones that you see that are of value, that's what you work in. Right? You see so many things, but you don't care. You know what I'm saying? You know, you walk by the, you know, the fancy clothes store, you walk by the donut shop, you walk by this, that, but you walk into the hardware shop. Because that's what is of value. So that's Krishna. But the other ones, since you don't notice them, you don't have to try to see Krishna there because you don't even think about it. In other words, Krishna is everything, but what you have to worry about is what things you worry about, not something else. Right? So that's Prajumna. Then he says that having done this, then you should at all, that's very good up to now, that's Samanya, but you should understand that Krishna is a person. Beyond all that, that he's entered into everything, right? You know, he's all the potencies, he's all these. So in other words, the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma, like, that's all there, but he is a person beyond that. Because all this is his expansion, so he, as the original person, still remains. So then, that should be your ultimate goal. So in other words, in seeing Krishna everywhere, and within that what you think is important, then your goals that you're trying to obtain, they should be in connection with Krishna as a person. That's why the point of it's always saying that it's favorable to the Lord, because the other two are Krishna conscious, but it's not necessarily favorable. You know what I'm saying? You have to make it favorable. Then, the last point he makes is, therefore, at all times, all places, all circumstances, like that, indirectly and directly, you should try to see him. So that's your Abhideya. That's your Vasudeva. You understand? So, the presentation of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana in four parts, that's very standard. Now, of that, in just trying to understand the principles of work of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, then you need to know Sambandha and Prayojana. Because if those are correct, your Abhideya is going to be correct. Because only if you are attached to something, you'll act. But you can only be attached if the proper identity is there. Therefore, then, so much of the discussion, we're dealing with Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but we're only discussing two points of it. I and mine. Envy and attachment. You know, masculine and feminine.
Are there two aspects of...
That's Sambandha and Prayojana. No, it's not the two there. That means this, you're dealing with Sambandha, I, which is your identity. And Prayojana means you get a result, mine.
And the identity is masculine and the goal is
feminine. Feminine, yeah. So that's why the feminine is... Their connection to the masculine creates identity. All right? And the masculine's connection to the feminine creates happiness. Right? Does that make sense? So identity also means security. That's the position of fear. You're afraid of losing something. Right? So secure means you're not afraid of losing anything. Therefore, if one is not acting in such a way that the environment feels secure, therefore there's anger. Right? You're not getting a external result. That makes the man angry, but it doesn't make a woman angry. Right? For the woman, it's the experience gained from that result. That's what they're interested in. But that only has meaning if it's connected back to the identity, the security. You know what I'm saying? So when they get angry, it's not based on the externals, like the man is trying to establish that it is. So that's also a misapplied understanding. Right? You know, good point, you know, 180 degrees misapplied. Right? Because the common point is, If you're trying to get to something, the medium is how you're going to do it. So since the man is interested in the medium and its result, and the woman's interested in the mood that one is trying to deal and the unspoken, or what the result is pursuance of. In both cases, the medium is what you're discussing. Right? So that's why the men mistake that the woman is interested in the material observable forms. But for them, the form, manipulating the forms give experience. For the men, manipulating the forms gives observable, more forms. You understand? No, the woman is. No, he adds that to what it is, but his position of activity is based in sambandha. It's the field of activity, so you deal with the field of activities that will give you more observable results from that. You know what I'm saying? So that's his focus, but unspoken is he expects to be happy from that. But if you want to be happy from that, means you have to deal on that platform, the experiential platform, to actually do it. In other words, through all three stages, you have to be dealing on the experiential. Otherwise, how will you get it? But they deal on the form and then think they're going to get it, which won't work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so now one may argue, okay, so then the men have to get that together, right? That they have to understand in operating what would be a term, because I've never come up with a good term. The experiential is what you get from it. What would be the form of it?
The mechanism.
Yeah, the mechanics, that would work. I'm not sure if they have that, but the other was the physical form of it. But so, in there, then one can say is the man is operating the mechanics to actually get something, an experience. But his experience is generally when he gets what he observes, what he, you know, in other words, what he wants is something observable. But actually gained from that is experiential. But his focus is on the observable. But actually what's important to him is the experiential. But he's not understanding that. So by understanding that, then it makes things work. If he doesn't understand it, it'll always be a problem. Right? And he'll think he's right in his mechanics because he only sees mechanics. And the woman is always telling him that he never does anything, he never gets anything done, he's a useless, he's this, that. But he sees he's getting so much done. Because what it is experientially one is doing nothing. One is unaware, in fact. Right?
It's
one
like can't. He's stuck in this abundance.
Yes, because he is I am the controller. So I do this, I get this result. And getting that result, I call myself happy. You know what I'm saying? You understand? So that's the problem. Now, in that, one could say, okay, well, it's the feminine. Well, therefore, in theirs, it would be the opposite. Right? And so they want the experiential, so that means it's coming through the medium of the mechanics, so therefore they should be much more, you know, supportive or logical in their dealing with the mechanics. And that way it makes it much easier for the men to do their job. Right? That would be the natural state. I must say that's the first time I've ever said something that the men have smiled. Generally always the women smile. The men never smile. So that was the first smile that we got. Now, that would logically make sense, but is experiential logical? No. Therefore, since that's their field, it doesn't have to be logical. So that's why the point is the medium is the mechanics. That's what both of them can talk about and relate on. You know what I'm saying? But the experiential women are already experiencing, it's the men who needs to gain it. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, the man has to make that endeavor. You know what I'm saying? He has to bridge the gap. Right? Otherwise, you're saying the women have to bridge the gap. But then, how masculine is that? You know what I'm saying? Masculine, you go out and get it yourself, and this and that, and you know what I'm saying?
So what do the women have to do?
The women, it's not that they, what do they have to do, it's what they will do.
Just in reaction to whatever happens.
Yeah. Means it's not a matter of that, but it'll happen naturally. Right? In other words, if you're doing that, it completes the circuit. They'll naturally, spontaneously perform their side. You understand? But if you don't perform your side, then they have to mechanically perform their side. And it gets really, means men can go through mechanics because that's what they are. Women aren't mechanical. Therefore, it gets really old for them really fast. Right? And then one wonders, where did the concept of nagging come from? Right? Because it's the method of trying to bring the man to the focus of what is felt to be important. Right? Because he has his plan, so they want this done. And so you've taken that and fitted it into your plan. But it's still mechanistic. It's not a matter of that it actually is dealing with the experience of presence. So that they've mentioned it now means it has to be dealt with now. Even though logically it may go this way and that way. But the point is it's interaction that gets experience, not how perfectly you did. It means, yes, you could get this, do this first, do that, based on all these different things, these other five things, then go downstairs to get the thing that she needs. You know, but by the time you finish all that, the moment's passed, and then because they'll do something else. Does that make sense? Then when you finally do, either if they're more tolerant or, you know, just they don't worry about it, meaning that they don't feel that it's actually an option that you can get, so they don't, why put your attention there? Then when you come back, then they're just not interested. Like that. Otherwise, if they actually think it's still possible, that's when they may make comments while you're still trying to put those five elements together at once. You know, and then your thing is, you know, well, I'm on it. Don't you see? I'm doing the thing. No, but you're not doing the thing. You're doing your plan. You're not actually interacting in the relationship. You're just dealing with the field of activities, but they're not field of activities. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the point. So it may mean you go up and down the stairs two or three times. So now what's efficient? You got all the stuff, went down, got all the thing, that was done. Or the relationship is efficiently working. The other one, mechanically, the externals, the forms are going on nice, but there is no relationship, or it's very weak. Right? Or the other is you're doing things that mechanically you wouldn't necessarily do it that way, and if you know you were in the house alone, but the relationship is going great. So you got married. In other words, a person gets married because he's thinking that's really going to enhance his, you know, mechanically moving the material energy and getting various forms done, right? Isn't that why every man gets married? No, if he was into that, he would join the, you know, auto mechanic store or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Go down and, you know, do something like that, you know? Right? So that's the point that's missed, is that unless you understand these positions, you can't understand. You know what I'm saying? So it was once you understand it, then you understand why people do what they do. Because it's just philosophy, it's science. It's not a matter of, you know, well, you know, you can't understand it because you're not a grihasta and you're not been through it. I would put it the other way. I would say 99.9% of grihasthas, they're absolutely in no position to understand male-female relationships. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you wanted to, let's say, study the Mona Lisa picture, okay? Now, what happens if you walked up to it so close that your nose is pressed against it? How much are you going to understand? No, they don't understand the negative aspects. They know the aspects exist, because if they understood the negative aspects, it wouldn't be negative aspects. That you see it as a negative aspect right there, that 100% proves you don't know what you're talking about, because you don't know the science. Bog tiag. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. The man is in the house all day with the wife, really, really working out, trying to make her happy and everything like that. Now, when he needs a little time to himself to go do some man things, you know. So does that mean there's in his mind a drop in the relationship? Not at all. All it is he spent time there, and now he needs a change in how he applies his energy. You know what I'm saying? In other words, a man, when he goes off on his own to deal with things. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, things don't they generally react the way you want, and if they don't, they don't say anything. You know what I'm saying? You go and work on the car, and if you're not paying attention, you know, you turn the wrench too much and you strip the nut, then, you know, you're annoyed and this and that, but it doesn't start yelling and screaming. You know? So you still have to deal with it as if you're dealing with a woman, but you don't relate like that because it doesn't say anything. You think you're in control, but you're not in control. You've just, because you're not paying attention, just ruined that nut. Now you're going to have to go get some other special thing, wrench, try to take that off, go to the store, get a new one, bring it back, and now pay attention and put it on right. So it's no different than dealing with the wife. Absolutely no, but because you can do it when you want, how you want, then you figure you're in control. But still, you have to deal with the nut, how it's supposed to be dealt with, and the wrench, how it's supposed to be dealt with. So it's no different. But it's seen as different. That's why I'm saying it's not seen. Now, then, having done that, you feel refreshed, then you go back to the home, and you're ready to, you know, put all your attention into the family. Right? Isn't it? So, why is it you don't consider that aspect of tiag negative? In your mind it's not, but in the woman's mind it is. It's time to yourself, time where they're not involved. It's not even that they're part of it. You know what I'm saying? They're not a consideration. Right. So they would call that negative. So why would you consider, when they're experiencing the emotions happening in a relationship, if it's, you know, how you say, the relationship's going nice because the man is sensitive, so therefore the security of them is very great. And then the man is not sensitive enough, so they feel insecure. So they're acting in such a way to try to develop, bring the relationship back to it being secure, you know, solid, by either not talking or yelling and screaming, or, you know, dealing in a way that the man would call unfavorable. You understand? So why is that unfavorable, but the man's going off on his own is not fair? The bogan tiag on both of them. You know what I'm saying? Since the point is variety, feminine means variety, so they eat like this for so many days, then they want to eat something different. Right? Ideally, it's something different that is of the same standard, but even if it's not of the same standard, it's different. You know what I'm saying? So why is that considered negative? That's the nature of feminine.
The whole thing's negative,
ultimately. But the science of it is not. That's there. But the point is you still have to deal with everything in the same way. It doesn't matter who you are, the formula of how you have to deal in Sambandha Abhidaya approach, it's no different. Because anything you see is Krishna's energy. So that means it's feminine. You know what I'm saying?
Are the devotees also?
What, you can deal with them any way you like, and it's going to go the way you say it's going to go? You know what I'm saying?
In that sense of being energy.
Yes. It's just the way relationship works. Relationship indicates the manifestation of the feminine nature. If there's no relationship, means there's only Krishna. There's only the masculine, Atmarama. So that means there's no need or desire for relationship. So this whole thing of the man is detached, but he has the desire for relationship, and because he's detached, he won't actually do the things that create relationship, but he expects all the goals and results and enjoyments of relationship. That's completely bogus.
You should stay on
his own, but then he still has to follow the same principles. So the point is if he has no need, why get married? But if he has a need, he has to get married and follow them correctly. How do you tell a real brahmachari? The real brahmachari is one who can deal with any aspect of the material energy, and he has nothing to gain from it. That's how you tell a real brahmachari. You understand? So the grihastha means he has something to gain from it. So you still have to deal in the same way. That's why probably a good brahmachari makes a good grihastha. right? Because he's learned the same thing. He's learned how to actually be humble, tolerant, respect others, and not expect anything for himself. With that, he can deal with any aspect of God's creation. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it's not that it's been understood. It is a point of philosophy. It is a science. It's not just whatever you feel like. That doesn't work. You know, you feel like your car should fly. Does it fly? You know what I'm saying? You know, you decide, you feel like your car should be purple today, you know, instead of red. So does it happen? No, you have to make it happen. So that's the thing. The idea that you're going to get something with no work is bogus. It doesn't exist in the cosmic creation. But somehow or another, it's a common idea that the conditioned soul, that that's how it's going to work. Does that make sense? You have something to add to this?
Just one really quick point. The field of activities. So the field of activities always needs to, rather than the one example you gave where the man goes off, and this is his field. It doesn't include the woman at all. So
yeah, because he's gone back into Sankarshan. See, that's the thing, is going back into Sambandha, you go back as Prajumna. But when they go into Sankarshan, then it's just you and the things, your Atmarama. It's just you and what you consider you. The field of activities is common, but the difference is the man is the field of activities, while the woman connecting herself to the man has gained a field of activities.
Yeah, so the male energy, even if it's, you know, like male and female, like in any relationship, whether it's mother and child, mm-hmm. husband and wife, the person in the role of the male energy always has to have that consciousness of the field, that they're actually opening up the field of activities.
They're making the field of activities available. Right, they're making it available. You understand? That's why whatever's the woman's is the woman's, and whatever's the man's is the woman's. You understand? Because he is the field of activities. And then there's things that are given to her. And then there's everything else, but that's why she connects, is then there's a common field in which relationship can happen. So when one's dealing, one has to stay within Prajumna. Prajumna Aniruddha Vasudev. Prajumna is the one's attractiveness to the field. Sankarshan means it's the field. It's just the facts and figures that's there. Prajumna means the attraction to the field. What you want to do with the field. What you would be attracted to in the field.
Where does that come from?
Where does it come from?
Why is it? Is it arbitrarily or like?
Why is it? Means arbitrary means what is your nature?
I mean, which. There's four, I've read that, there's four. But why this one to Sambandha or this one to Amida? That's what I
Why mean. Not? No Sankarshan is who establishes right and wrong. That's what Sankarshan does. Does that make sense? Therefore, what are you establishing right and wrong? The field of activities. Prajumna is Cupid. In other words, the desire, the excitement to be involved in the field of activities. But it's not that you are involved. It's the excitement to be involved. Aniruddha is the goal. He is the mind. He is whatever it is that you're trying to get. You know, he is that happiness that you get from there. He controls all that. Therefore, the Prayojana is him. Right? And Vasudev, he performs pastimes.
Aniruddha is
the mind. Is Prajumna. I mean Prayojana. And Vasudev is the pastime itself. In other words, when Sambandha and Prayojana meet, that's Abhideya. Abhideya is where Prayojana and Abhideya are together. Does that make sense? Okay.
They expand in a particular way? Is it from
Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the main thing. But you can also see is that you can also put it the other way. It means Krishna is first, and then from him come Balaram and all that. So in that way, then the Lord's desire to have that particular kind of pastime. Therefore, you have to have the environment that it's going to be, the attraction and need for that, so everybody works together in the pastime. At the same time, as you can take it that in actual application, based on the field of activities, then you have desires, and that then you can perform certain activities. So, therefore, you also get explanations where Sankarshan, from Sankarshan, expands the next Sankarshan, and then he expands Prajumna and Aniruddha and expands Vasudev, because it still comes out of the field. So both are correct.
From Balaram to Sankarshan.
It means Balaram is Sankarshan, you know, in this case. So therefore you have the element that how do you say? It's because the Lord's desire for a particular pastime, therefore Balaram makes the arrangements. All right, and his expansions. But at the same time, as if you're just dealing in the formality of technicality of how things are working, then as Sankarshan creates the environment, based on that environment, then you can actually have a pastime. You know what I'm saying? So that brings in the element of, you know, Krishna has the desire what's there, but at the same time, because of him putting himself under yoga maya, then depending upon the environment, therefore only he can act. He can only have a pastime. You know what I'm saying? He wants to interact with the gopis, right? So therefore, then Sankarshan creates, you know, the aspect of the dham that's favorable for interacting with the gopis, the desire in his heart, in the gopis' heart for that, the goals of what they want to get and all that, what can be gotten in that environment. Then Krishna can act within that. Right? Does that make sense? At the same time as Krishna wants it in the first place, therefore Balaram makes the arrangements. Then once that's arrangements are there, then Krishna coming into it, then he acts according to what actually the field is going on now. You know what I'm saying? So it's his desire that it's there, Balaram arranges it, but then according to what Balaram arranges, then he acts. And then according within that, what he's interested, then Balaram arranges. So it's always a back and forth. This whole idea that relationship just means going in this nice straight line off into the sunset doesn't work. Okay, maybe if you're on a horse out in the middle of nowhere and you ride towards where the sun is setting, it might work. But once the sun's set and you're sitting in the dark on your horse, then what? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. So it sounds great. You know what I'm saying? They rode off into the sunset. It's a good end of a book or a movie. But what does that mean?
That point you've been making over and over, that the progeny comes back to us on it's progressive life.
Yeah, because it's that once your goal is there, you've achieved it, it comes back, it becomes part of the field of activities.
How does that happen in the spiritual world? We can see it in this world and in our devotional life. How does that happen in the spiritual world?
That's where it originally happens. This is a reflection. Krishna, okay. Krishna, his goal is to call the gopis. So he plays his flute, right? He wants to dance with the gopis, right? He's in the forest of Vrindavan. He sees the moon and all that. So that's the environment. That's the Sankarshan. He's inspired to have the rasa dance. That's Prajumna. So then as Abhideya, or as Vasudeva, he plays his flute. Right? And then he gets the goal that the gopis come. Right? So now is it over now? No. Now the gopi, that position moves back to Sambandha. Now Krishna's with the gopis in the forest. Now he has a specific desire what he'd like to do with them. He'd like to have the rasa dance. Right? You understand? So then it just keeps moving. It's a cycle.
And all the pastimes like that.
Everything's like that. That's how the Lord has arranged it. So that's the science of how it works here. It's because it's a reflection. It means there it's perfect and in its fullest taste and everything. Here it's done, even if you operate it perfectly, still the taste of it will never compare to the spiritual. But it will be the best it gets in the material world. You know what I'm saying? So if you're doing that and you don't understand its connection to Krishna, in other words, you're doing it because you're pious, you're a good person, follow the Vedas, do everything properly, then you'll get as good as it gets in the material world, and you'll think that's all there is, and you'll think you're very happy. But the devotee, because he understands this process has come from Krishna and everything he's dealing with is Krishna, therefore he gets that material reward and that satisfaction, but comparing these elements, you know, of Brahman Paramatma to Bhagavan, then it doesn't compare. It's so much greater than that. So with time, as he becomes satisfied in the material platform, he'll understand is the real satisfaction is in the Bhagavan aspect. But he's using the same process so he can go to the spiritual world and he's comfortable with acting within Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojana in its real fashion. Because you go there yourself. It's not you go there, you're a different person. You're the same person. That's why until you're qualified, you can't go there. Otherwise, they'd change you when you get over there. Right? You have to change here because you go as you are. So unless you're, you know, a pure devotee, how do you go there? You understand? So you deal with the same concepts of relationship here as are there. So what you're dealing with is the mechanics of relationship. What results you get from that, the experiences that you get from that. That's what you have to understand and work with here. Otherwise, how are you going to work with it there? You understand? So if you naturally, spontaneously pick it up and do nicely, you're just so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you're so humble, no one bothers you, doesn't matter if they're having a bad hair day, everything works nice because of your devotional service, great, then you don't have to get into this technicality. But if it's not happening naturally, then this is how you can make it work. Right? It's either got to happen spontaneously, or it's got to happen through, you know, regulation. You know what I'm saying? So either by being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you develop all the qualities of the demigod, then everybody loves to be with you. And so therefore, you are qualified to go back to Godhead. Or you don't quite work on that platform because of so many considerations here. Therefore, knowing the mechanics of it, though it seems much more greater and complicated, it's actually the lower level. But in any case, it's what works. But compared to being in complete ignorance and not knowing what goes on, or to have an attitude and think one knows what's going on, that's much less. You know, so in other words, the person with attitude and thinks they're doing great, that's the lowest. The person who doesn't have the attitude but doesn't even know that there's such a science, that's next up. You know, then someone who is operating the science like that, because he's intellectually understood, goes through practices, it works today, doesn't work tomorrow, contemplates why it didn't work, tries to make it work, and over years and years and years he makes it work, then that's better than that. And of course, better than that is spontaneity. But if you don't have it naturally, by following the form of it properly, the science, and applying it, one will come to the spontaneous platform. That makes sense? So that's why it said, if you can make, you know, it means the energy it takes to, you know, work properly in family life, that same energy, you know, you could conquer the world, right? So that's the whole principle. But the point is, you're not inspired to conquer the world, but you are inspired to make a family work. Right? So then you can do that. So now, if you can be successful at that, then now you're in a position to, you know, go out and preach and conquer the world. Does that make sense?
Otherwise, it's just talk.
It's just talk. It's just talk. And that's what I, as we started in the beginning, as we were saying, is that's why it's science. You understand the science, you can understand all this stuff. Because the point is the grihastha is right there, he's experiencing it, but he doesn't actually know what he's experiencing. He doesn't know why it's like that. Therefore, it's not necessarily that grihastha, by if he has an open mind, now by hearing this stuff, he will be way ahead of someone who just knows the science. Because he's in the field where that experience is there. He'll become very expert at that, or you know what I'm saying. So that's the thing, but only if he has that. But for someone who doesn't know that, to tell someone who is having some understanding of it, that because they're not in the field, they can't know what it is. That's just downright stupid. You know, it's just downright stupid. You know what I'm saying? It's simply based on arrogance, that since I'm the married man, I know everything. It's just like this. you know, others that you can put on the list of most amazing, you know, illusions. One of them is, I got married, therefore the day I got married, I became the world's expert on marriage. The other one is, as soon as somehow or another I'm able to produce a child, I become the world expert on child raising. So these are the two I've seen greatest obstacles in Grihastha, especially men, but also it affects the women. But generally it affects the women because the men don't understand. If the men understood, the women would be able to follow that. But so these two make it the most difficult for actually establishing, you know, the completeness of the Vedic culture, because they already figure, I'm already perfect. So you can't make the families work, so therefore you can't make the women strong, therefore the kids you can't make strong, therefore you can't run the educational institutions, therefore you can't produce the next generation who is actually going to run the society when the present one is, you know, sitting down and doing their bhajan. You know what I'm saying? So therefore it all eventually comes back to the men's, you know, attachment to their own false ego that somehow or another is the only thing that makes them feel masculine. When being masculine is something completely different. You know what I'm saying? You go back in time, hundreds of years of these old period kind of themes and all that. The men are very masculine, but they're very, very, you know, submissive to the relationship. And you see these guys win. And now it's supposed to be the guy with the attitude gets the girl. But we see before it was, no, it was the guy with the character got the girl. And in fact, they only say that, they never do get the girl. The guys with attitude don't have girls. Unless they got a lot of money. And then the girls will hang around for that. But if they got attitude and no money, they don't have girls. They just don't. It's not there. It's not. It doesn't exist. Right? It looks good on the movies because that dweeb, you know, he'll pay the money to watch that because it supports what he actually thinks. But it's not true. You understand? Yeah, so therefore then people, you know, it confirms, yeah, see, everybody thinks. No, all it is the guy, the producers know how to make money. That's all. You know, if selling a lie makes money, they'll do it. You know, selling the truth won't make money. They're not about to.
What did I say to some devotee, like one devotee writes on the internet that Krishna consciousness is not a science, according to the monotheism, he writes this whole
thing? He monotheism because, one, he's an atheist, and two, he doesn't actually know what he's talking about. How is it not a science?
I tried one explanation.
No, it's that because they have their own pat things, but you have to go into it and just pick it apart.
You're saying it's like observable. There's an observable result. Although there is an observable result. If you follow the process, you get this result.
So he says there's no observable result.
Yeah, that's
so therefore, therefore, when he's sitting in the living room, his, you know, son comes running into the room, his baby son running in the room with this big smile on his face and outstretched arms, and it creates happiness within himself. Where's the observable result? There is none. And that's exactly why he got married. Exactly. So therefore, then he's saying is that his whole lifestyle has no basis. So in other words, the observable is only to affect the experiential. But the problem is people are absorbed in the mundane experiential instead of the spiritual experiential. That's the problem. So to try to say experiential is not scientific means, one, they don't have enough finer brain tissue to understand it. So, you know, try drinking milk or chanting Hare Krishna or living in a very aesthetic place. That might help. But the point is he doesn't have the intelligence to actually understand it. He's learned a little this and that from the karmis and thinks he's very intelligent.
He's using the karmic reason to say it's not a science and supporting that when all the
acharyas say it. So then what is a science? Other than quantum, what's science?
Science is just speculation.
Yeah, it's just speculation, but I'm just saying, even you're taking the thing, because it's the only one that's based purely on what's observable. Right? You can't observe Darwin's theory. It's not science. Quantum is right there. The atom is there. It's doing this. They don't deal with things that aren't there. Yeah, yes?
The first vertical, it's actually directly perceivable.
Yeah, it is directly perceivable. But you have to have faith to do it. Just like they have faith that the atoms are there and that the proton is there and this and that. Therefore, they see it.
I think he accepts it's directly perceivable, but the word science says we shouldn't call it a science, even though Prabhupada called it a science.
Why shouldn't we call it a science?
Because according to their definition...
Who's they? Who's this they?
The chair of science studies at
Oxford. So who? Since when is he the authority? Just ask the guy, who created the cosmos? God or that scientist? So if God likes to call it science, which he does in the Gita, why are you going to accept this other gentleman instead of God? That's the question.
It's for preaching
what? Preaching to who? How many people out there are scientists? Yeah, you don't bump into them on the street. So therefore, what is the meaning of this? And the point is, it is a science. You have to show them it's a science. Just because they're so thick-headed they can't understand it, doesn't mean that it's not. They're preaching an illusion, and they're very confident about it, and everybody accepts it. So why don't, if we preach the truth, even though they think it's illusion, is it not going to be accepted? You know what I'm saying? It's just weakness of heart, that's all. It's just absolute weakness of heart. Prabhupada spoke to many scientists, and they had no problem. Yes? Yeah, they don't actually. It's simply is about what they can observe with their senses. But then the problem is then that's okay. But then why is it that they look up into the they deal in their day to day life? They're working so much from the mind that's going from past memory, but they're not actually dealing with the sense right now. So that means it was scientific then, but what they're dealing with it now is not scientific, because each time he doesn't go back to that thing. You know what I'm saying? So just because they've come up with a definition that is so narrow that it doesn't actually include all the concept of actual science, they're saying it just to narrow it down so that quantum, because within those fields, they don't accept psychology and this and that as sciences. In their minds, only if you can see it, you know, in an ion microscope, it's science. So therefore, and the guy's whole life is based on non-scientific. So if science is actually the highest thing, then why is he married? Why does he have a family? Why does he care for money? Why isn't he just absorbed in the science for science sake, even if he just starves to death because no one will feed him? So his whole life is experiential. Everything about his life is experiential. Yeah, of course. So the point is, all these things, it's not there. So, because they have such a narrow definition of science, it doesn't fit. Why are we supposed to be burdened with that? You know, and since when are we going to do this? So many people, then they don't believe in reincarnation, so we should stop talking that also. And they don't believe God's, you know, actually a person. They're actually all impersonal, so we should stop preaching that also. And most people are in malechas, so therefore they don't believe in vegetarians, so we should stop preaching that also. And, you know, like this, we go through everything. Is that how it works? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is all he wants to do is just say that his little niche is fine and no one should bother him, because so it's just lack of faith, that's all. It's just purely lack of faith. Because the point is God created it, so therefore it's created on certain formulas. the scientists. So what are the laws of nature? Did the scientist make them, or the scientist actually observes them? So only after the scientist observes them, this is what you can ask them. So after the scientist, only after the scientist observes the law of nature, like Newton, then gravity exists? Or gravity was always there, and just it wasn't until 1700s that somebody figured out that it existed. Now, isn't that stupid, or is that stupid? Right? You know, so that's the point, is there's laws of God, laws of nature, that everybody will say, you know, you can't go against. You know, just that the atom is the way it is. Who made it like that, the scientist or God? So his whole creation is just as scientific. It's just a matter of if you want to see it or not. That's all. You want to keep your head in the sand and say it doesn't exist, hey, go ahead. But if you call that science, we would call that, you know, illusion. We would call that, you know, a lack of, you know, narrow-mindedness. We would call that uneducated. We have all kinds of nice names for it. But, you know, that it's... So, you know what I'm saying? So this is the problem, is that it's lack of faith. It just boils down to lack of faith. That's all. It's not a matter of this will go preaching better. How many people is he making a devotee? Probably not very many. Right? And someone like Devamrita Maharaj should go out and will speak, you know, our philosophy in an analytical way. He probably makes more devotees than any other devotee in this movement. Because he'll go out and just present our philosophy. But he'll give it in a very intellectual way. Like that. So therefore, I don't buy it. Because what he's talking, it's not scientific in the first place. It's God's laws. All they're doing is discovering God's laws that were already there, that are already mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. They narrow it down so much that it fits their little niche and makes them feel special. That's all. You know, just like we were saying before, the men narrow down their definition, you know, just so that it fits into their thing so they can feel good about themselves. So that's all that is being done, is the definition is wrong. It's a fallacious definition. Like that. It's just like, how do you define a cow? This is the first lesson in Nyaya. How do you define a cow? Okay, milk. Buffaloes give milk. Goats give milk. Even a platypus gives milk. So milk is out. Horns. Horns. Buffaloes have horns. You know, how you say, the devil has horns? You know, like that. You know, there are snails with horns. You know, bugs with horns. So horns are out. So now what?
You can't use Krishna like that from the spiritual Krishna.
No, but we're talking science here. We're talking science.
It eats grass.
It eats grass. So do horses. I've even seen a cat eat grass. It moves, and others make some kind of sound like that.
Moose.
Huh?
A moose
also moves. Huh? Moose.
Something that moves and
it's
not a moose.
No, but still, that's then in the negative. You haven't defined it in the positive. You understand? Because these things are either too broad, you know, or it's too narrow. You like that, okay? So the thing that sets a cow apart than any other animal is that underneath its chin it has that wavy flap of skin. No other animal has that. So that's what defines a cow. Is the doula. You understand? That's science. That's nyaya. That's logic. You understand? So their definition isn't correct, that's all. Because if he can't see how God says this is the king of all sciences, then that means he's actually not a very good scientist. So why is he in the field? Go into a field that he can explain. You know, why doesn't he get a new job? Go learn to cook or something, right? You know, the stupid books. Do something else. Be a pujari. But don't get into science, because he's not a very good scientist. Right? A scientist is willing to talk about stuff people think he's crazy. Einstein was talking about stuff that they didn't find for like something like 50 years later. He said, I think it was the protons were there. Everybody else said that they're not there. Or electron, whatever was the farther in thing, he said it was there. And they all said he was crazy. And, you know, 40, 50 years later, then they found it. You know what I'm saying? To this day, people are arguing whether, you know, Einstein was right or not, or they've moved on post-Einstein, this and that, but it goes back and forth. So that's the thing, is they're willing to say stuff that, you know, they have conviction. So if he has no conviction, why be a scientist? Find an area that he can have conviction in. That would be more useful for his own devotional life, even for his own personal life. Because he'll always have to be doing what someone else says is correct. Right? And one of the biggest, one major reason why women are very upset with men is that they do what their friends say is how you should deal with his wife. You know what I'm saying? It may work with their wife, but it doesn't work with, it's his wife. So therefore, you're always going to be saying what someone else does, and it will affect, it will impact your own personal life. Because you always have to do something that others think is important. So in my mind, that's a Shudra. That's not a Brahma. A scientist is supposed to be a Brahma.
I think he likes to say something controversial.
That's okay if he wants to, if that's what he wants to do. If he just likes to argue, that's another thing. Or if he wants to make a name for himself because he says kind of foolish things, that's another thing. But the point is, going back to Godhead is another topic altogether. You understand? Yes? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Janita Gaura Premanandi.
Harih Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveeryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Virvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
on page 20. 20, the third paragraph, is that the one? Oh, because you have a different... You have the... Page 20?
Yeah.
And the author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, third one.
Yeah.
Okay. The author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits that he is just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this work. That should be the attitude of all preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think of ourselves as great preachers, but should always consider that we are simply instrumental to the previous acharyas, and simply by following in their footsteps, we may be able to do something for the benefit of suffering humanity. So the means the highest welfare or welfare is established as that which is beneficial for everybody. So that means the whole world. So then we see as here, Srila Rupa Goswami here is thinking in terms of the whole world. As we saw that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his conversations with Srila Prabhupada, he was discussing the whole world. Does that make sense? Because that's Lord Chaitanya's mood. Lord Chaitanya's mood is the whole world. Do you drink a lot of water? No. See, it's when you don't eat and you fast, then what happens is all of the poisons in the body that may be any toxins, they go into the digestive system, into your stomach. Right? Then, if there's not a lot of water in that to wash them out or something, then they will move more slowly through the system, and then when they go farther through the stomach and all that, then all those toxins will be pulled out into the blood. Right? And then when they go into the blood, they'll either come out as a rash or out as pimples or boils. You understand? So there's more involved than not eating. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So now he feels himself unable to do this, but that is the natural. We don't think of ourselves as great preachers. We are simply instruments for the preaching. Right? In other words, we do whatever we can. So it's not that we're the ones that are doing everything. We do what we can. The acharyas, they're doing everything, and we just assist. Because when we get to the spiritual world, that's what's going on. We're not actually serving Krishna, right? The previous acharyas and that, they're serving Krishna. They don't think they're actually serving Krishna. They feel they're instruments to serving, you know, under the direction of the gopis. And they feel they're not serving, but Radharani's serving, and she feels she's not a servant, right? So that means there's no one actually in the line that feels that they are the one who's doing the work. Right? Does that make sense? So that's always the principle, is that we feel we are doing our best to assist. Right? So that's the importance of cooperation and other aspects like that. Yes? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is divided into four parts. Just as the ocean is sometimes divided into four parts, and there are different sections within each of these four divisions. Originally, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean is divided like the watery ocean into east, south, west, and north, while the subsections within these different divisions are called waves. As in an ocean, there are always different waves, either on the eastern side, the southern, the western, or the northern side. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu similarly has different waves. In the first part, there are four waves, the first being a general description of devotional service. The second concerns the regulative principles for executing devotional service. And the third wave, devotional service in ecstasy. In the fourth is the ultimate goal of life, love of Godhead. These will be explicitly described along with their symptoms in the back. Here we have 409. I'm not sure what you have there, but it's just after. Oh, wow, Heaven, actually. It's after the author. Then you have actually from the original where the waves are, and then Srila Prabhupada points out where the differences are. So you can see. So what has happened here is that you have eastern side, Bhagavad Bhakti Beda, varieties of devotional service. Then he has, like Prabhupada says, first wave, Samanya Bhakti, is devotional service in general. Second wave, Sadhana Bhakti, devotional service in practice. Third wave, Bhava Bhakti, ecstatic devotional service. And fourth wave, Prema Bhakti, devotional service in love of God. So basically you have five chapters. He's taking this wave and then to make it easier to understand, broken it up into five chapters. And in each of those chapters, then he has main headings to describe, you know, what's going on. So you have five chapters in the first wave, then the second wave, then that means that's 5 off of 19, so at least 14. Then the fourth wave, Prema Bhakti, has 1, so that's 13. The third wave has 2, that's 12, 11. Right? So then you have 11 chapters in the second wave. Right? So Prabhupada has taken these four. So like that, throughout the whole book, then he is broken it up just to make it easier for us. So that's why then it's a summary study, because then it makes it easier to understand. They're categorized very nicely. Right? The authorized scriptures of bhakti or devotional service, following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, can be summarized in the following statement by Srila Rupa Goswami. Quote, first-class devotional service is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. Right? So he always makes this point of being Krishna conscious and being favorable. Right? So being conscious is the first step. So not generally the devotees, they're conscious and it's favorable, but still one has to be aware. Because one can be conscious, but what one's doing is not favorable. Does that make sense? So that means it's favorable because Krishna likes it that way. It's not favorable because we've decided what Krishna likes. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. What is it that makes Krishna pleased with it? One is the devotional attitude. The devotional attitude where we're not trying to gain anything for ourselves. We're simply trying to please. So that's the main thing. Then he has natural, so that's the most important. If that's there, that's then it defined properly as devotional service. It's the devotional attitude that is favorable for Krishna's pleasure. Now then the forms or the mediums that it takes in that service, then there are forms that Krishna more prefers. And then there's forms that Krishna less prefers. But the point is whatever it is, it should be done with devotion. In other words, if you have a form that Krishna more prefers, but the attitude is less, right? And a form that's not so preferred, but the attitude is more, naturally, it's whichever has the more attitude, right? And generally, in most conversations, this is where most people like to stop the discussion. But there is also the option of using a form that Krishna prefers and doing it with the devotional attitude and that it's favorable. So then you have three aspects that Krishna likes, as opposed to two. Right? But those two are the most important. The devotional atmosphere, a conscious of Krishna with the right mood. Right? So one has to be conscious to be Krishna conscious. Right? Because if you're not conscious, how do you know that you are Krishna conscious? Right? Just like the impersonalist. They figure they merge into the Supreme, but if you merge, then you don't have your individuality. So how do you know you're happy? Right? If you don't exist, how do you know if you're happy? Right? Doesn't make sense. So if you're not conscious, how do you know that your devotional service is favorable? Right? So you have to be conscious. Then you can, that consciousness, then you can put Krishna there. It's a yoga system, right? Yoga system, until you're focused on one spot, how do you put Vishnu in there for meditation? Right? So if you're not conscious, how can you be conscious of Krishna? What do you think? What do you think about first being conscious, then being Krishna conscious?
It's a good idea.
So you're doing some deep concentration and meditation upon that point. So deep you are oblivious to the world, so focused in your absorption. Yes? No, you weren't so absorbed. You were distracted. Oh, so we should tell him not to distract you next time. I see. So we should wait until you just naturally fall over and hit your head on the floor, then you'll wake up. So exactly like that. Okay. The purport is that one may also be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably, but that cannot be counted as pure devotional service. Devotional service should be free from the desire for any material benefit or for sense gratification, as these desires are cultivated through fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. Generally, people... Yes?
How can you be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably? Because to be Krishna conscious, you need to be conscious to be Krishna conscious. And if you're unfavorably, you can say you can't be... If you're forced in some devotional service, this isn't necessarily Krishna conscious, this is devotional service or some service.
If you're forced...
No, so if you're unfavorably, you don't want to be there.
Because your definition is not properly placed.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You have a good definition. But the problem is then it's the wrong example. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what we're saying in the Nyaya where we'll get back to it this evening, yeah. Where your argument is good, but you've applied it on the wrong thing,
okay.
Right? While the other thing is it's applied on the right thing, but it's the wrong argument, or it's a complete misunderstanding of the whole thing. But here is you have a good point, but you applied it on the wrong part. Favorable devotional service doesn't mean favorable to us, it means favorable to Krishna.
Okay,
now that makes sense? So the example would be Kamsa.
Yes.
He was 24/7 thinking of Krishna, but it wasn't favorable to Krishna.
Yeah.
You understand? So that's what it means. It doesn't mean favorable. So if you are Krishna conscious, that is favorable to you.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay?
Yeah, they're all Krishna conscious, but it's not favorable. That's why the distinction is made. Generally, we don't think we take it as synonymous, because in one sense it is. Pure devotional service means it is. But in the process of becoming God conscious, it's not necessarily. So it's just like we're praying to Krishna for something that's material. Then that we've gone to Him, that's good. Like that. But it won't be called pure devotional service. Right? It's devotional service, but it's not pure devotional service because it's not necessarily favorable to Krishna. Right? If it's something you're trying to do for Krishna and therefore have the intelligence or this or that to do it, then it may be the focus is on the material, but the ultimate result of that is for Krishna. Right? Then it would be considered that that's good, it's progressive. But pure devotional service means when that's not there. Like Kardama, he sees that he wants to go back to Godhead, serve the Lord, but he has material attachments. So he approaches the Lord so that he may be successful in gaining family life and going through it. Right? So he's approached. So it's good. That's your first story, and you know that Sukadev Goswami describes. Right? So then that principle, that's fine, but we will consider it's when you don't have something you're trying to gain yourself. In other words, it's your duty to go through these things or whatever. That's another thing. You know, but he had the desire, but he approaches the Lord. So that's there. So we're pointing it out so we see the difference. Otherwise, you think, well, I'm thinking Krishna, I'm praying to Krishna, I'm doing all these things, so that's good enough. But it is being pointed out that one is trying to take it farther. It's tinged by karma and jnana, so it's jnana, misra, karma, misra.
And then when one recognizes that there's a need, but they also recognize the fact that they don't need to do this, but then still there's a need, this is still, until it gets to the point where the need is gone completely, and there's no change of it, it's not...
The need means is that you could say the need for it, it doesn't mean the form disappears.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So
like Ambarish Maharaj is a pure devotee. It's where the attachment lies. In other words, that's the point. Where is the goal?
Okay.
If you're seeing yourself as a devotee of Krishna, but you have these material desires, so you're approaching Krishna because you're His devotee, right? You're not going to someone else. So then that's nice. You know, it's some kind of reciprocation or some kind of relationship. But the attachment is to something else. Right, so because the identity is different, therefore the attachments are different. So as the identity becomes more fixed, the attachments will also become more regularized.
Yeah, because if the attachment was on Krishna, then you would just directly serve.
Yeah. Yes, but here you have to understand is that because pure devotional service then is starting from the Madhyam platform of Nishta. There'll be an overlap, but the point is the determination is pure. One may not be. I've heard it said that in the Bengali or Sanskrit that's written, Rupa Goswami makes the point of 60%. Once it comes to 60%, then it's considered that that's the prominent. You understand? So it's still 40% impure, but it's 60%. Is pure. That means the determination is greater than 50. Because 50, it could go this way or that way. This means it's on the determined side. This is a great mistake that many make, is that they think until it's 100% pure, it's not pure. Right? So that's the point is that no, because it's pure in the intent. Then with time, the form will also take on that. Once you get to that point, then it moves very quickly. Before that point, it's much slower, like that. And as it comes to the point of actually, then it being simply philosophical determination, you actually have a taste for the name, then it speeds up incredibly quick.
Yeah, because when it switches, it's like, so you're taking shelter of Krishna, so then Krishna takes control of the external situation, rather than you fighting whatever.
Yeah, well, or fighting or just trying to establish the environment that you want. In other words, it's Krishna's environment, so you're serving that environment rather than you're trying to create your own environment. You know what I'm saying? Still, you have to do it through the same method, but the intent is slightly different. So to be able to see what's one's intent and all that, that's the point. Not by the form. You know what I'm saying? You know, Ambarish Maharaj is a grihastha, is a king, he's the emperor of the world. But his intent is pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada is a family person, but his intent is pure devotion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, therefore, the forms that they're using, the medium that they're using, is that of a person who's involved in the material activities, both in varna and ashram. Right? But the purpose is to please Krishna. That's the... Because the point is very easily one can say all these things, but one has to be able to determine and understand where the fault lies. You know what I'm saying? Because if you can do that, then you can also tell what's useful and what's not. Like what we said before, according to the Nyaya, in other words, the concept that you had there in the presentation was correct, but it was misapplied. You understand? So, but in a general argument, because there's the misapplication, then the value of what you're applying is thrown out also. So that's the baby with the bathwater. The point is the bathwater is dirty. You throw that out, you keep the baby. Right? Does that make sense? So the problem in much of the modern context are that they can't make this distinction. And so they connect it all together, so they throw out everything. You know what I'm saying? They can't use the intelligence to define the difference. That's why it's important. So here Srila Rupa Goswami is making the point is that means serving the Lord, engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably, that both parts are there. Then you can actually tell the quality of it. Otherwise, it's hard to tell the quality. Is that okay? Yeah. You understand all that? Yes. Do we understand the application of that point of Nyaya? Yes, no? Not very well. Means that you have something that you are, you have a point to be made, but the point that you make actually doesn't fit the example that you give. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's a good argument, it's a good point, but it's applied in the wrong place. You know, like, is deep frying vegetables a bona fide cooking process? Okay. What about if we deep fry tomatoes? Yeah, it's not you because it's the wrong application. You know what I'm saying? But that doesn't mean that the point is bogus. It just means that the application wasn't correct. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that the point about that it should be favorable to something means something that they like, situations they like to be in, things that they like, how they like to interact, that's all a correct understanding of favorable. But it was applied to ourselves rather than to Krishna. Right? Because this is what is being talked about. Here is Krishna. So therefore, then the argument is able to understand situations once in and applications of service within that. Right? So with that kind of understanding, then when you apply it actually to Krishna, that means the situations in which devotional service is done and the kind of devotional service that's done, or the environment or the mood, right? Then you understand that's all what's considered unfavorable. Otherwise, most devotees just take it as constantly engaged in, you know, in Krishna. It means you're constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness. Is the same as serving the Lord favorably. They don't make a distinction. So therefore, so many other things could come up in their devotional, you know, activities that actually aren't favorable to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's nice, okay, that you recognize, but on what level? So favorable to Krishna means Krishna as a person. You know what I'm saying? You're dealing with Brahman and Paramatma, that's nice. It's in its own way, okay, it's favorable in that way. But at the same time, it's very much in consideration of ourselves. Right? Because the energies that are working this world, that's your Brahman feature, but that's managed by Paramatma. Right? So in that way, you could say that, the creation as you see it, that's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Right? Because he is the universal form. He is Virat. Right? At the same time, you know, and then Paramatma is then in every atom, between every atom, and he maintains it. He's the maintainer. Right? Because you have Brahma and Shiva, creator and destroyer. He's the maintainer. So sitting in everyone's heart, he maintains all that. At the same time, as you could look at it, is that actually, he's the one that has technically entered into everything. You know, it's Garbhodakshaya as its potency, but as Kiradakshaya actually enters it. So therefore you could take Paramatma as universal form. Right? And in other words, there's going to be on both platforms of the attract means having entered it, you make the dead matter attractive. So that's Prajumna, but at the same, because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is Prajumna. But at the same time is that there's not going to be action without Aniruddha. Right? Until this goal, Prayojana. So, in one sense, they're very closely connected because by desire, if that's contemplated, it becomes attachment. And whatever is gained from attachment goes back to the position of future desire. Right? So, there are different aspects of the same thing. Right? Aniruddha is an expansion of Prajumna. Prajumna is an expansion of Sankarshan, right? So the environment, the rules, the regulations, the elements, how the whole thing works, its purposes, its goals, its understanding, philosophy, that's all Sankarshan. From that comes the desire to perform the activity, which is Prajumna. Expanding from him is then the need to do it, which is Aniruddha. Right? Then you'll have Vasudeva, but the interesting thing is Vasudeva is the source of Sankarshan. So in other words, the desire to do activity, so the environment and everything's created, and then Krishna can come and perform the activity. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? Like that. So you have to be able to distinguish these, so therefore there's... You had something? Direct. What do you mean by direct? You said, what did you say?
Direct.
Huh?
Direct.
You said you couldn't find a direct definition. I just wanted to know what you meant by direct. Because otherwise, then. Okay, well, then. Oh, you couldn't find the explanation. And Prayojana. Okay. Sambandha, you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, right? So you have three, it has three parts. But within Sambandha, then there's two aspects. One is the actual relationship itself and everything connected to the relationship. The other is the inspiration to act within that relationship, right? But you haven't acted, you're inspired to act. So when you act, that's avideya, that's vasudeva, right? And the goal that you're trying to achieve in that action or in that in the interaction of the relationship, that's aniruddha. So he's the goal. Does that make sense? So in understanding sambandha, avideya, and prayojana, then you always see is that the acharyas break sambandha into the two parts. So Vedanta Sutra is like that. Prabhupada's analysis on Gita is like that. The Chaturshloki is like that. Right? The first of the Chaturshloki is that Krishna says he is everything. Whatever you see is him. He was there before the creation. He's there during. He's there after. So whatever you're looking at, if you're perceiving it, it's him. Right? Because that gets rid of your concept of deism. Otherwise, the first thing we're going to do is accept the supremacy of God, but distance him from the material world, because we're the controllers of it. Right? It's all right, he's God, but still I'm the controller of what is mine. Right? So, the whole point, yeah, does that make sense? Because otherwise, if he's everything, I have to change my identity. Because even the things that I consider my identity are still him. You know, if I'm this body, but, you know, he's the concept of form of the body, the workings of the body, so I can't claim it to be my own. Well, if I deify the Lord, I can put him back, or deify Prabhupada, I can put them back. That leaves me as the you know, undisputed, at least in my view, the undisputed, you know, Lord of my life. Yeah, it makes you, it puts you in the position of Shankarshan, because, you know, and all these things, because then it's not Krishna. So that's his first point he makes. Second point he makes is whatever within whatever is in this world that you see, whatever you value, that's him. Because it's by that value, that's the area you're going to work in. Right? There's so many things going on in the world, but you only work in some of them. Those ones that you see that are of value, that's what you work in. Right? You see so many things, you know, but you don't care. You know what I'm saying? You know, you walk by the, you know, the fancy clothes store, you walk by the donut shop, you walk by this, that, but you walk into the hardware shop. Because that's what is of value. So that's Krishna. But the other ones, since you don't notice them, you don't have to try to see Krishna there because you don't even think about it. In other words, Krishna is everything, but what you have to worry about is what things you worry about, not something else. Right? So that's Prajumna. Then he says that having done this, then you should at all, how you say, is that that's very good up to now, that's samanya, but you should understand that Krishna is a person. Beyond all that, that he's entered into everything, right? You know, he's all the potencies, he's all these, so in other words, the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma. Like, that's all there, but he is a person beyond that. Because all this is his expansion, so he, as the original person, still remains. So then, that should be your ultimate goal. So in other words, in seeing Krishna everywhere, and within that what you think is important, then your goals that you're trying to obtain, they should be in connection with Krishna as a person. That's why the point of it's always saying that it's favorable to the Lord, because the other two are Krishna conscious, but it's not necessarily favorable. You know what I'm saying? You have to make it favorable. Then, the last point he makes is, therefore, at all times, all places, all circumstances, like that, indirectly and directly, you should try to see him. So that's your abhideya. That's your vasudeva. You understand? So, the presentation of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana and four parts, that's very standard. Now, of that, and just trying to understand the principles of work of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, then you need to know sambandha and prayojana. Because if those are correct, your abhideya is going to be correct. Because only if you are attached to something, you'll act. But you can only be attached if the proper identity is there. Therefore, then, so much of the discussion, we're dealing with sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, but we're only discussing two points of it, I and mine. Envy and attachment. You know, masculine, feminine.
Are there two aspects of...
That's sambandha and prayojana. No, it's not the two there. That means this, you're dealing with sambandha, I, which is your identity. And prayojana means you get a result, mine.
And the identity is masculine and the goal is the feminine.
Feminine, yeah. So that's why the feminine is, their connection to the masculine creates identity. Right? And the masculine's connection to the feminine creates happiness. Right? Does that make sense? So identity also means security. That's the position of fear. You're afraid of losing something. Right? So secure means you're not afraid of losing anything. Therefore, if one is not acting in such a way that the environment feels secure, therefore there's anger. Right? You're not getting a external result. That makes the man angry, but it doesn't make a woman angry. Right? For the woman, it's the experience gained from that result. That's what they're interested in. But that only has meaning if it's connected back to the identity, the security. You know what I'm saying? So when they get angry, it's not based on the externals, like the man is trying to establish that it is. So that's also a misapplied understanding. Right? You know, good point, you know, 180 degrees misapplied. Right? Because the common point is, if you're trying to get to something, the medium is how you're going to do it. So since the man is interested in the medium and its result, and the woman's interested in the mood that one is trying to deal and the unspoken, or what the result is pursuance of. In both cases, the medium is what you're discussing. Right, so that's why the men mistake that the woman is interested in the material observable forms. But for them, the form, manipulating the forms give experience. For the men, manipulating the forms gives observable more forms. You understand?
Didn't you say that the man is interested in the experience?
No, the woman is.
No,
he adds that to what it is, but his position of activity is based in sambandha. It's the field of activity, so you deal with the field of activities that will give you more observable results from that. You know what I'm saying? So that's his focus, but unspoken is he expects to be happy from that. But if you want to be happy from that, means you have to deal on that platform, the experiential platform, to actually do it. In other words, through all three stages, you have to be dealing on the experiential. Otherwise, how will you get it? But they deal on the form and then think they're going to get it, which won't work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so now one may argue, okay, so then the men have to get that together, right? That they have to understand that in operating the experiential is what you get from it. What would be the form of it? The mechanics, that would work. I'm not sure if they have that, but the other was the physical form of it. But so in there, then one can say is the man is operating the mechanics to actually get something, an experience. But his experience is generally when he gets what he observes, what he, you know, in other words, what he wants is something observable. But actually gained from that is experiential. But his focus is on the observable. But actually what's important to him is the experiential. But he's not understanding that. So by understanding that, then it makes things work. If he doesn't understand it, it'll always be a problem. Right? And he'll think he's right in his mechanics because he only sees mechanics, and the woman is always telling him that he never does anything, he never gets anything done, he's a useless, he's this, that, but he sees he's getting so much done. Because what it is experientially one is doing nothing. One is unaware, in fact. Right?
It's
one
like can't. He's stuck in this abundance.
Yes, because he is I. Yeah. I am the controller. So I do this, I get this result. And getting that result, I call myself happy. You know what I'm saying? You understand? So that's the problem. Now, in that, one could say, okay, well, it's the feminine. Well, therefore, in theirs is, would be the opposite. Right? And so they want the experiential, so that means it's coming through the medium of the mechanics. So therefore, they should be much more, you know, supportive or logical in their dealing with the mechanics. And that way, it makes it much easier for the men to do their job. Right? That would be the natural state. I must say, that's the first time I've ever said something that the men have smiled. Generally, always the women smile. The men never smile. So that was the first smile that we got. Now, that would logically make sense. But is experiential logical? No. Therefore, since that's their field, it doesn't have to be logical. So that's why the point is the medium is the mechanics. That's what both of them can talk about and relate on. You know what I'm saying? But the experiential, women are already experiencing. It's the men who needs to gain it. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the man has to make that endeavor. You know what I'm saying? He has to bridge the gap. Right? Otherwise, you're saying the women have to bridge the gap. But then, how masculine is that? You know what I'm saying? Masculine, you go out and get it yourself, and this and that. And you know what I'm saying?
So what do the women have to do?
The women, it's not that they, what do they have to do, it's what they will do. Means it's not a matter of that, but it'll happen naturally. Right? In other words, if you're doing that, it completes the circuit. They'll naturally, spontaneously perform their side. You understand? But if you don't perform your side, then they have to mechanically perform their side. And it gets really, means men can go through mechanics because that's what they are. Women aren't mechanical. Therefore, it gets really old for them really fast. Right? And then one wonders, where did the concept of nagging come from? Right? Because it's the method of trying to bring the man to the focus of what is felt to be important. Right? Because he has his plan, so they want this done. And so you've taken that and fitted it into your plan. But it's still mechanistic. It's not a matter of that it actually is dealing with the experience of presence. So that they've mentioned it now means it has to be dealt with now. Even though logically it may go this way and that way. But the point is it's interaction that gets experience, not how perfectly you did. It means, yes, you could get this, do this first, do that, this, and all these different things, these other five things, then go downstairs to get the thing that she needs. You know, but by the time you finish all that, the moment's passed, and then because they'll do something else. Does that make sense? Then when you finally do, either if they're more tolerant or, you know, just they don't worry about it, meaning that they don't feel that it's actually an option that you can get, so they don't, why put your attention there? Then when you come back, then they're just not interested. Like that. Otherwise, if they actually think it's still possible, that's when they may make comments while you're still trying to put those five elements together at once. You know, and then you think, is, you know, well, I'm on it. Don't you see? I'm doing the thing. No, but you're not doing the thing. You're doing your plan. You're not actually interacting in the relationship. You're just dealing with the field of activities. But they're not field of activities. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the point. So it may mean you go up and down the stairs two or three times. So now what's efficient? You got all the stuff, went down, got all the thing, that was done. Or the relationship is efficiently working. The other one, mechanically, the externals, the forms are going on nice, but there is no relationship, or it's very weak. Right? Or the other is you're doing things that mechanically you wouldn't necessarily do it that way, and if you know you were in the house alone, but the relationship is going great. So you got married. In other words, a person gets married because he's thinking that's really going to enhance his, you know, mechanically moving the material energy and getting various forms done, right? Isn't that why every man gets married? No, if he was into that, he would join the, you know, the auto mechanic store or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Go down and, you know, do something like that, you know? Right? So that's the point that's missed, is that unless you understand these positions, you can't understand. You know what I'm saying? So it was once you understand it, then you understand why people do what they do. Because it's just philosophy, it's science. It's not a matter of, you know, well, you know, you can't understand it because you're not a grihasta and you're not been through it. I would put it the other way. I would say 99.9% of grihastas, they're absolutely in no position to understand male-female relationships. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like if you wanted to, let's say, study the Mona Lisa picture, okay? Now, what happens if you walked up to it so close that your nose is pressed against it? How much are you going to understand? No, they don't understand the negative aspects. They know the aspects exist, because if they understood the negative aspects, it wouldn't be negative aspects. That you see it as a negative aspect right there, that 100% proves you don't know what you're talking about, because you don't know the science. Bog tiag. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. The man is in the house all day with the wife, really, really working out, trying to make her happy and everything like that. Now, when he needs a little time to himself to go do some man things, you know. So does that mean there's, in his mind, a drop in the relationship? Not at all. All it is he spent time there, and now he needs a change in how he applies his energy. You know what I'm saying? In other words, a man, when he goes off on his own to deal with things. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, things don't, they generally react the way you want, and if they don't, they don't say anything. You know what I'm saying? You go and work on the car, and if you're not paying attention, you know, you turn the wrench too much and you strip the nut, then, you know, you're annoyed and this and that, but it doesn't start yelling and screaming. You know? So you still have to deal with it as if you're dealing with a woman, but you don't relate like that because it doesn't say anything. You think you're in control, but you're not in control. You've just, because you're not paying attention, just ruined that nut. Now you're going to have to go get some other special thing, wrench, try to take that off, go to the store, get a new one, bring it back, and now pay attention and put it on right. So it's no different than dealing with the wife. Absolutely no, but because you can do it when you want, how you want, then you figure you're in control. But still, you have to deal with the nut, how it's supposed to be dealt with, and the wrench, how it's supposed to be dealt with. So it's no different. But it's seen as different. That's why I'm saying it's not seen. Now, then, having done that, you feel refreshed, then you go back to the home, and you're ready to, you know, put all your attention into the family. Right? Isn't it? So, why is it you don't consider that aspect of tiag negative? In your mind it's not, but in the woman's mind it is. It's time to yourself, time where they're not involved. It's not even that they're part of it. You know what I'm saying? They're not a consideration. Right. So they would call that negative. So why would you consider, when they're experiencing the emotions happening in a relationship, if it's, you know, how you say, the relationship's going nice because the man is sensitive, so therefore the security of them is very great. And then the man is not sensitive enough, so they feel insecure. So they're acting in such a way to try to develop, bring the relationship back to it being secure, you know, solid, by either not talking or yelling and screaming, or, you know, dealing in a way that the man would call unfavorable. You understand? So why is that unfavorable, but the man's going off on his own is not fair? The bogan tiag on both of them. You know what I'm saying? Since the point is variety, feminine means variety, so they eat like this for so many days, then they want to eat something different. Right? Ideally, it's something different that is of the same standard, but even if it's not of the same standard, it's different. You know what I'm saying? So why is that considered negative? That's the nature of feminine.
Ultimately,
but the science of it is not. That's there. But the point is you still have to deal with everything in the same way. It doesn't matter who you are, the formula of how you have to deal in some Anabhidhaya approach, it's no different. Because anything you see is Krishna's energy. So that means it's feminine. You know what I'm saying? What, you can deal with them any way you like and it's going to go the way you say it's going to go? You know what I'm saying? Yes. It's just the way relationship works. Relationship indicates the manifestation of the feminine nature. If there's no relationship, means there's only Krishna. There's only the masculine, Atmarama. So that means there's no need or desire for relationship. So this whole thing of the man is detached, but he has the desire for relationship, and because he's detached, he won't actually do the things that create relationship, but he expects all the goals and results and enjoyments of relationship. That's completely bogus.
You should stay on his own.
On his own, but then he still has to follow the same principles. So the point is if he has no need, why get married? But if he has a need, he has to get married and follow them correctly. How do you tell a real brahmachari? The real brahmachari is one who can deal with any aspect of the material energy, and he has nothing to gain from it. That's how you tell a real brahmachari. You understand? So the grihastha means he has something to gain from it. So you still have to deal in the same way. That's why a good brahmachari makes a good grihastha, right? Because he's learned the same thing. He's learned how to actually be humble, tolerant, respect others, and not expect anything for himself. With that, he can deal with any aspect of God's creation. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it's not that it's been understood. It is a point of philosophy. It is a science. It's not just whatever you feel like. That doesn't work. You know, you feel like your car should fly. Does it fly? You know what I'm saying? You know, you decide, you feel like your car should be purple today, you know, instead of red. So does it happen? No, you have to make it happen. So that's the thing. The idea that you're going to get something with no work is bogus. It doesn't exist in the cosmic creation. But somehow or another, it's a common idea that the conditioned soul, that that's how it's going to work. Does that make sense? You have something to add to this?
Just, Howard, just one really quick point. The field of activities, always needs to, rather than the one example you gave where the man goes off, and this is his field, that doesn't include the woman at all. So
yeah, because he's gone back into Sankarshan. Yeah. See, that's the thing is, going back into Sambandha, you go back as Prajumna. But when they go into Sankarshan, then it's just you and the things, your Atmarama. It's just you and what you consider you.
Yeah, so in every relationship, then there always needs to be consideration that the field of activities is common.
The field of activities is common, but the difference is the man is the field of activities, while the woman connecting herself to the man has gained a field of activities.
Yeah, so the mm-hmm. The person in the role of the male energy always has to have that consciousness of the field, that they're actually opening up the field.
They're making the field of activities available. Right. They're making it available. You understand? That's why whatever's the woman's is the woman's, and whatever's the man's is the woman's. You understand? Because he is the field of activities. And then there's things that are given to her. And then there's everything else, but that's why she connects, is then there's a common field in which relationship can happen. So when one's dealing, one has to stay within Prajumna. Prajumna, Aniruddha, Vasudeva.
So I still don't understand, but how do those four relate? Maybe this is just something I've never heard, but why is Prajumna
Prajumna is the one's attractiveness to the field. Sankarshan means it's the field. It's just the facts and figures that's there. Prajumna means the attraction to the field. What you want to do with the field. What you would be attracted to in the field.
Where does that come from?
Where does it come from?
Why is it? Is it arbitrarily or like?
Why is it? Means arbitrary means what is your nature?
I mean, which there's four. I've read that there's four. But why this one to Sambandha or this one to Amida? That's what.
Why not? Sankarshan is who establishes right and wrong. That's what Sankarshan does. Does that make sense? Therefore, what are you establishing right and wrong? The field of activities. Prajumna is Cupid. In other words, the desire, the excitement to be involved in the field of activities. But it's not that you are involved. It's the excitement to be involved. Aniruddha is the goal. He is the mind. He is whatever it is that you're trying to get. You know, he is that happiness that you get from there. He controls all that. Therefore, the Prayojana is him. Right? And Vasudev, he performs pastimes.
Aniruddha is
the mind. Is Prajumna. I mean Prayojana. And Vasudev is the pastime itself. In other words, when Sambandha and Prayojana meet, that's Abhideya. Abhideya is where Prayojana and Abhideya are together. Does that make sense? Okay.
They expand in a particular way? Is it from
Vasudev, Shankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the main thing. But you can also see is that you can also put it the other way. It means Krishna is first, and then from him come Balaram and all that. So in that way, then the Lord's desire to have that particular kind of pastime. Therefore, you have to have the environment that it's going to be, the attraction and need for that. So everybody works together in the pastime. At the same time, as you can take it that in actual application. Based on the field of activities, then you have desires, and that then you can perform certain activities. So, therefore, you also get explanations where Sankarshan expands the next Sankarshan, and then he expands Prajumna and Aniruddha and expands Vasudev because it still comes out of the field. So both are correct.
From Balaram to Sankarshan.
It means Balaram is Sankarshan, you know, in this case. So. Therefore, you have the element that how do you say? It's because the Lord's desire for a particular pastime. Therefore, Balaram makes the arrangements, all right, and his expansions. But at the same time, as if you're just dealing in the formality of technicality of how things are working. Then as Sankarshan creates the environment based on that environment, then you can actually have a pastime. You know what I'm saying? So that brings in the element of, Krishna has the desire what's there, but at the same time, because of him putting himself into yoga maya, then depending upon the environment, therefore only he can act. He can only have a pastime. You know what I'm saying? He wants to interact with the gopis, right? So therefore, then Sankarshan creates... You know, the aspect of the dham that's favorable for interacting with the gopis, the desire in his heart, in the gopis' heart for that, the goals of what they want to get and all that, what can be gotten in that environment, then Krishna can act within that. Right? Does that make sense? At the same time as Krishna wants it in the first place, therefore Balaram makes the arrangements. Then once that's arrangements are there, then Krishna coming into it, then he acts according to what actually the field is going on now. You know what I'm saying? So it's his desire that it's there, Balaram arranges it, but then according to what Balaram arranges, then he acts. And then according within that, what he's interested, then Balaram arranges. So it's always a back and forth. This whole idea that relationship just means going in this nice straight line off into the sunset doesn't work. Okay, maybe if you're on a horse out in the middle of nowhere and you ride towards where the sun is setting, it might work. But once the sun's set and you're sitting in the dark on your horse, then what? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. So it sounds great, You know what I'm saying? They rode off into the sunset. It's a good end of a book or a movie. But what does that mean? Yeah, because it's that once your goal is there, you've achieved it, it comes back, it becomes part of the field of activities.
How does that happen in the spiritual world? We can see it in this world and in our devotional life. How does that happen in the spiritual world?
That's where it originally happens. This is the reflection.
Krishna,
his goal is to call the gopis, so he plays his flute, right? He wants to dance with the gopis, right? He's in the forest of Vrindavan. He sees the moon and all that. So that's the environment. That's the Sankarshan. He's inspired to have the rasa dance. That's Prajumna. So then as Abhideya, or as Vasudeva, he plays his flute. Right? And then he gets the goal that the gopis come. Right? So now is it over now? No. Now the gopi, that position moves back to Sambandha. Now Krishna's with the gopis in the forest. Now he has a specific desire what he'd like to do with them. He'd like to have the rasa dance. Right? You understand? So then it just keeps moving. It's a cycle.
And all the pastimes like that.
Everything's like that. That's how the Lord has arranged it. So that's the science of how it works here. It's because it's a reflection. It means there it's perfect and in its fullest taste and everything. Here it's done, even if you operate it perfectly, still the taste of it will never compare to the spiritual. But it will be the best it gets in the material world. You know what I'm saying? So if you're doing that and you don't understand its connection to Krishna, in other words, you're doing it because you're pious, you're a good person, follow the Vedas, do everything properly, then you'll get as good as it gets in the material world, and you'll think that's all there is, and you'll think you're very happy. But the devotee, because he understands this process has come from Krishna, and everything he's dealing with is Krishna, therefore he gets that material reward and that satisfaction, but comparing these elements, you know, of Brahman, Paramatma to Bhagavan, then it doesn't compare. It's so much greater than that. So with time, as he becomes satisfied in the material platform, he'll understand is the real satisfaction is in the Bhagavan aspect. But he's using the same process so he can go to the spiritual world and he's comfortable with acting within Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana in its real fashion. Because you go there yourself. It's not you go there, you're a different person. You're the same person. That's why until you're qualified, you can't go there. Otherwise, they change you when you get over there. Right? You have to change here because you go as you are. So unless you're, you know, a pure devotee, how do you go there? You understand? So you deal with the same concept of relationship here as are there. So what you're dealing with is the mechanics of relationship. What results you get from that, the experiences that you get from that. That's what you have to understand and work with here. Otherwise, how are you going to work with it there? You understand? So if you naturally, spontaneously pick it up and do nicely, you're just so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you're so humble, no one bothers you, doesn't matter if they're having a bad hair day, everything works nice because of your devotional service, great, then you don't have to get into this technicality. But if it's not happening naturally, then this is how you can make it work. Right? It's either got to happen spontaneously, or it's got to happen through, you know, regulation. You know what I'm saying? So either by being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, you develop all the qualities of the demigod, then everybody loves to be with you. And so therefore, you are qualified to go back to Godhead. Or you don't quite work on that platform because of so many considerations here. Therefore, knowing the mechanics of it, though it seems much more greater and complicated, it's actually the lower level. But in any case, it's what works. But compared to being in complete ignorance and not knowing what goes on, or to have an attitude and think one knows what's going on, that's much less. You know. So in other words, the person with attitude and thinks they're doing great, that's the lowest. The person who doesn't have the attitude, but doesn't even know that there's such a science, that's next up. You know. Then someone who is operating the science like that, because he's intellectually understood, goes through practices, it works today, doesn't work tomorrow, contemplates why it didn't work, tries to make it work, and over years and years and years he makes it work, then that's better than that. And of course, better than that is spontaneity, but If you don't have it naturally by following the form of it properly, the science, and applying it, one will come to the spontaneous platform. That makes sense? So that's why it said, if you can make, you know, it means the energy it takes to, you know, work properly in family life, that same energy, you know, you could conquer the world, right? So that's the whole principle. But the point is, you're not inspired to conquer the world, but you are inspired to make a family work. Right? So then you can do that. So now, if you can be successful at that, then now you're in a position to, you know, go out and preach and conquer the world. Does that make sense? Just talk. Let's just talk. And that's what I, as we started in the beginning, as you were saying, is that's why it's science. You understand the science, you can understand all this stuff. Because the point is the Grihastha is right there, he's experiencing it, but he doesn't actually know what he's experiencing. He doesn't know why it's like that. Therefore, it's not necessarily that Grihastha, by if he has an open mind, now, by hearing this stuff, he will be way ahead of someone who just knows the science. Because he's in the field where that experience is there. He'll become very expert at that, or, you know what I'm saying. So that's the thing, but only if he has that. But for someone who doesn't know that, to tell someone who is having some understanding of it, that because they're not in the field, they can't know what it is, that's just downright stupid. You know, it's just downright stupid. You know what I'm saying? It's simply based on arrogance that since I'm the married man, I know everything. It's just like this. These are, you know, others that you can put on the list of the most amazing, you know, illusions. One of them is, I got married, therefore the day I got married, I became the world's expert on marriage. The other one is, as soon as somehow or another I'm able to produce a child, I become the world expert on child raising. So these are the two I've seen greatest obstacles in Grihastha, especially men, but also it affects the women. But generally it affects the women because the men don't understand. If the men understood, the women would be able to follow that. But so these two make it the most difficult for actually establishing, you know, the completeness of the Vedic culture, because they already figure I'm already perfect. So you can't make the families work, so therefore you can't make the women strong, therefore the kids you can't make strong, therefore you can't run the educational institutions, therefore you can't produce the next generation who is actually going to run the society when the present one is, you know, sitting down and doing their bhajan. You know what I'm saying? So therefore it all eventually comes back to the men's, you know, attachment to their own false ego that somehow or another is the only thing that makes them feel masculine. When being masculine is something completely different. You know what I'm saying? You go back in time, hundreds of years of these old period kind of themes and all that. The men are very masculine, but they're very, very, you know, submissive to the relationship. And you see these guys win. And now it's supposed to be the guy with the attitude gets the girl. But we see before it was, no, it was the guy with the character got the girl. And in fact, they only say that, they never do get the girl. The guys with attitude don't have girls. Unless they got a lot of money. And then the girls will hang around for that. But if they got attitude and no money, they don't have girls. They just don't. It's not there. It doesn't exist. Right? It looks good on the movies because that dweeb, you know, he'll pay the money to watch that because it supports what he actually thinks. But it's not true. You understand? Yeah, so therefore then people, you know, it confirms, yeah, see, everybody thinks. No, all it is the guy, the producers know how to make money. That's all. You know, if selling a lie makes money, they'll do it. You know, selling the truth won't make money. They're not about to.
What did I say to some devotee, like one devotee writes on the internet, that Krishna consciousness is actually not a science, according to the monotheism.
He's monotheism because, one, he's an atheist, and two, he doesn't actually know what he's talking about. How is it not a science?
I tried one explanation of atheists, so I just gave up.
No, it's that because they have their own pat things, but you have to go into it and just pick it apart.
It's like observable. There's observable result. Although there is an observable result. If you follow the process, you get this result.
He says there's no observable result.
Yeah, that's
so therefore, when he's sitting in the living room, his son comes running into the room, his baby son running in the room with this big smile on his face and outstretched arms, and it creates happiness within himself. Where's the observable result? There is none, and that's exactly why he got married. Exactly. So therefore, then he's saying is that his whole lifestyle has no basis. So in other words, the observable is only to affect the experiential. But the problem is people are absorbed in the mundane experiential instead of the spiritual experiential. That's the problem. So to try to say experiential is not scientific means, one, they don't have enough finer brain tissue to understand it. So, try drinking milk or chanting Hare Krishna or living in a very aesthetic place. That might help. But the point is he doesn't have the intelligence to actually understand it. He's learned a little this and that from the karmis and thinks he's very intelligent.
He's using the karmi reason to say it's not a science.
So then what is a science? Other than quantum, what's science? Yeah, it's just speculation, but I'm just saying, even you're taking the thing, because it's the only one that's based purely on what's observable. Right? You can't observe Darwin's theory. It's not science. Quantum is right there. The atom is there. It's doing this. They don't deal with things that aren't there. Yes? Yeah, it is directly perceivable, but you have to have faith to do it. Just like they have faith that the atoms are there and that the proton is there and this and that. Therefore, they see it.
I think he accepts it's directly perceivable, but the word science says we shouldn't call it a science, even though Prabhupada called it a science.
Why shouldn't we call it a science?
Because according to their definition...
Who's they? Who's this they?
The chair of science studies at Oxford.
So who? Since when is he the authority? Just ask the guy who created the cosmos, God or that scientist? So if God likes to call it science, which he does in the Gita, why are you going to accept this other gentleman instead of God? That's the question.
It's for preaching, you know.
It's for preaching what? Preaching to who? How many people out there are scientists? Yeah, you don't bump into them on the street. So therefore, what is the meaning of this? And the point is, it is a science. You have to show them it's a science. Just because they're so thick-headed they can't understand it, doesn't mean that it's not. They're preaching an illusion, and they're very confident about it, and everybody accepts it. So why don't, if we preach the truth, even though they think it's illusion, is it not going to be accepted? You know what I'm saying? It's just weakness of heart, that's all. It's just absolute weakness of heart. Prabhupada spoke to many scientists, and they had no problem. Yes? Yeah, they don't actually. It's simply about what they can observe with their senses. But then the problem is then that's okay. But then why is it that they look up into the they deal in their day to day life? They're working so much from the mind that's going from past memory. but they're not actually dealing with the sense right now. So that means it was scientific then, but what they're dealing with it now is not scientific, because each time he doesn't go back to that thing. You know what I'm saying? So just because they've come up with a definition that is so narrow that it doesn't actually include all the concept of actual science, they're saying it just to narrow it down so that quantum, because within those fields, they don't accept psychology and this and that as sciences. In their minds, only if you can see it, you know, in an ion microscope, it's science. So therefore, and the guy's whole life is based on non-scientific. So if science is actually the highest thing, then why is he married? Why does he have a family? Why does he care for money? Why isn't he just absorbed in the science for science sake, even if he just starves to death because no one will feed him? So his whole life is experiential. Everything about his life is experiential. Yeah, of course. So the point is all these things, it's not there. So because they have such a narrow definition of science, it doesn't fit. Why are we supposed to be burdened with that? You know, and since when are we going to do this? So many people, then they don't believe in reincarnation, so we should stop talking that also. And they don't believe God's, you know, actually a person. They're actually all impersonal, so we should stop preaching that also. And most people are in Malechas, so therefore they don't believe in vegetarians, so we should stop preaching that also. And, you know, like this, we go through everything. Is that how it works? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is all he wants to do is just say that his little niche is fine and no one should bother him, because so it's just lack of faith, that's all. It's just purely lack of faith. Because the point is God created it, so therefore it's created on certain formulas. The science, so what are the laws of nature? Did the scientist make them, or the scientist actually observes them? So only after the scientist observes them, this is what you can ask him. So only after the scientist observes the law of nature like Newton, then gravity exists? Or gravity was always there, and just it wasn't until 1700s that somebody figured out that it existed. Now, isn't that stupid, or is that stupid? Right? You know? So that's the point, is there's laws of God, laws of nature, that everybody will say, you know, you can't go against. You know? Just that the atom is the way it is. Who made it like that? The scientist or God? So his whole creation is just as scientific. It's just a matter of if you want to see it or not. That's all. You want to keep your head in the sand and say it doesn't exist? Hey, go ahead. But if you call that science, we would call that, you know, illusion. We would call that, you know, a lack of, you know, narrow-mindedness. We would call that uneducated. We have all kinds of nice names for it. But, you know, that it's, so, you know what I'm saying? So this is the problem, is that it's lack of faith. It just boils down to lack of faith. That's all. It's not a matter of this will go preaching better. How many people is he making a devotee? Probably not very many. Right? And someone like Devamrita Maharaj should go out and will speak, you know, our philosophy in an analytical way, he probably makes more devotees than any other devotee in this movement. Because he'll go out and just present our philosophy. But he'll give it in a very intellectual way. Like that. So therefore, I don't buy it. Because what he's talking, it's not scientific in the first place. It's God's laws. All they're doing is discovering God's laws that were already there, that are already mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita.
The point is they just narrow down the definition?
They narrow it down so much that it fits their little niche and makes them feel special. That's all. You know, just like we were saying before, the men narrow down their definition, you know, just so that it fits into their thing so they can feel good about themselves. So that's all that is being done, is the definition is wrong. It's a fallacious definition. Like that. It's just like, how do you define a cow? This is the first lesson in Nyaya. How do you define a cow? Okay, milk. Buffaloes give milk. Goats give milk. Even a platypus gives milk. So milk is out. Horns. Buffaloes have horns. you know, how you say, the devil has horns, you know, like that, you know, there are snails with horns, you know, bugs with horns, so horns are out. So now what?
You can't use Krishna like that from the spiritual, or Krishna like the spiritual.
No, but we're talking science here. We're talking science.
It eats grass.
It eats grass, so do horses. I've even seen a cat eat grass. It moves, and others make some kind of sound like that.
A moose.
Huh? A moose. A moose also moves. Huh? Moose.
Something that moves and
it's
not a moose.
No, but still, that's then in the negative. You haven't defined it in the positive. You understand? Because these things are either too broad, you know, or it's too narrow. You like that, okay? So the thing that sets a cow apart than any other animal is that underneath its chin it has that wavy flap of skin. No other animal has that. So that's what defines a cow. Is the dulap. You understand? That's science. That's nyaya. That's logic. You understand? So their definition isn't correct, that's all. Because if he can't see how God says this is the king of all sciences, then that means he's actually not a very good scientist. So why is he in the field? Go into a field that he can explain. You know, why doesn't he get a new job? Go learn to cook or something, right? You know, the stupid books. Do something else. Be a pujari. But don't get into science because he's not a very good scientist. Right? A scientist is willing to talk about stuff people think he's crazy. Einstein was talking about stuff that they didn't find for like something like 50 years later. He said, I think it was the protons were there. Everybody else said that they're not there. Or electron, whatever was the farther in thing. He said it was there. And they all said he was crazy. And, you know, 40, 50 years later, then they found him. You know what I'm saying? To this day, people are arguing whether, you know, Einstein was right or not, or they've moved on post-Einstein, this and that. But it goes back and forth. So that's the thing, is they're willing to say stuff that, you know, they have conviction. So if he has no conviction, why be a scientist? Find an area that he can have conviction in. That would be more useful for his own devotional life, even for his own personal life. You know what I'm saying? Because he'll always have to be doing what someone else says is correct. Right? And one major reason why women are very upset with men is that they do what their friends say is how you should deal with his wife. You know what I'm saying? It may work with their wife, but it doesn't work with... It's his way. So therefore, you're always going to be saying what someone else does, and it will impact your own personal life. Because you always have to do something that others think is important. So in my mind, that's a Shudra. That's not a Brahma. A scientist is supposed to be a Brahma.
I think he likes to say something controversial.
That's okay if that's what he wants to do. If he just likes to argue, that's another thing. Or if he wants to make a name for himself because he says kind of foolish things, that's another thing. But the point is going back to Godhead is another topic altogether. You understand? Yes?
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki Janita Gaura Premanandi.